Thank you for downloading an Onsale Radio podcast.
On this night here at Onsale Radio, we had a quick pop-in from the commish to the studios. Joining the Bickersons was Epic Poker League boss lady Annie Duke. They got a quick update on the current Epic action down in Vegas and one of the baddest bubble bad beats in history. Ooh, hang in there, Vanessa. Keep listening for more on that and to hear Pamela get a little frisky with Annie. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Onsale Radio. We've got Annie Duke with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I've been kind of busy railing the Epic Poker Tour for 3 days, and I know you're, like, incredibly busy being there around all the action and everything. And how do you juggle family and everything that you're doing?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that it's just a matter of priority setting, and what ends up happening is that depending on how busy I am with things outside of my family, other stuff starts to go. Like, my friends really understand right now that I just don't have a lot of time for socializing with them, and they're being very patient with me. Because, like, if I'm at, you know, when I get done with work, if I go home and someone asks me to go to dinner, it's like I just want to spend the time with my kids because they obviously really come first for me. So, you know, the people in my life really understand what we're trying to accomplish with Epic. I think that they're really supportive of what we're trying to accomplish with Epic, and they understand that I just don't have as much time as I used to go out and just, like, have fun with them, and that's really what's sort of giving in all of that.
Are your kids involved in any sports at all, any extracurricular activities?
Well, my son is a very avid football player. In fact, his football season just ended. And one of my daughters, my 11-year-old, is an excellent singer, and she's involved in quite a bit of, you know, sort of extracurricular music activities. You know, so those would be the big main sort of extracurricular stuff that's going on in the house.
Oh, that's cool. I bet that keeps you busy, especially football. Well, you got to be at the practice field all the time, and then the games.
It was every Monday. I got to say, I wasn't unhappy when the season ended. It was Monday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday practice in the evenings after school, and then every single Saturday was a game. So it was quite a bit.
God, I can understand that. I had three kids that were involved in sports, and we were either at the soccer field or at practice. Never had time for dinner. We're always fast fooding. And it just got crazy. It's just crazy, crazy, crazy.
Hey, Annie, this is SC Big. I'm a host here on Sunday night and on Tilt Radio. You got to tell us about the money bubble on the current Epic.
Crazy, right?
Oh,
crazy,
my God.
Crazy, crazy. That's twittering
crazy,
everywhere.
Crazy. Well, so here's the thing, is that in general, you know, and definitely in the last two hours of events, we've experienced quite a few bubbles, right? You have the money bubble, and then you've got the TV bubble, you know, the final table bubble, sometimes the money bubble and the TV bubble coincide, as they did here. And these bubbles have taken a really long time. You know, particularly with this bubble, it's a $50,000 bubble. So this is a really big bubble. And what's interesting is that I think it was Tihan, Joe Tihan, who had tweeted earlier about kind of abusing the bubble a little bit. It might have been him, I can't remember. But this was clearly a case where Tian thought that he was going to be able to sort of abuse the bubble and force Vanessa Russo into a laydown because it was really at this bubble moment, and this bubble was very big. It was a $50,000 bubble. So, you know, Faraz Jaka moved in for a very small stack and was at $58,000 or so, but you can correct me on that. And then Vanessa Russo now comes over the top of that raise for about $120,000, and Tian now moves her in. Now, I know what he's thinking. You know, Vanessa has, like, you know, enough behind that she can definitely fold in his mind, and it's a bubble moment, so he knows she's not going to want to commit. You know, Faraz is all in, so it makes his play look stronger because it seems like he can't be bluffing because Faraz is all in, and obviously he's playing for two things. He's playing for the money that Vanessa's put in, which is going to cause him to, you know, actually not have to commit any money to the pot because her raise is more than Faraz has put in already, right? So he's going to win that money from Vanessa, and then he's going to be able to free roll against Faraz. And I think that he just thought he was going to be able to sort of abuse the situation. You know, obviously Faraz was all in, so he didn't have any decision. Then Vanessa really went into the tank about whether she would call, and she called with queens. And Joe Tian turned over the four deuce offsuit. So he knocked out Faraz's aces, and Vanessa's queen. So, you know, someone said to me, well, wasn't Vanessa going to lose to Faraz anyway? I said, well, yeah, but she was only going to lose 58,000 or so. She wasn't going to lose her whole stack and be knocked out on the bubble there. So that's one of the more brutal ways that I've ever seen to get knocked out. And, you know, Vanessa was really choked up about it. I can totally understand why. This is obviously a really big moment. It's a huge bubble, $50,000 bubble, really big TV moment where, you know, in America, obviously, there's not a lot of ways for poker players to get on TV anymore. And I would have been equally heartbroken for sure had I been on the other end of that.
Oh, my. It is. When I saw her tweet that, I was like, unbelievable. It was just a 2-4 offsuit. Gets the aces and the queens, and just, especially for that huge amount of money. Does she have any hair left? I would be pulling my hair out. I'd be crying. I'd probably be in jail. I'd probably be abusing the tables, throwing chairs. How do you handle a beat like that? How in the world can you handle something like that?
I got to tell you, I mean, that particular beat, I don't know that I have a lot of advice for. You know, she's got to take comfort in the fact that she made a good call. I mean, it wasn't an obvious call with queens. You've got Faraz all in. You've now come over the top of Faraz. You got a guy that still came over the top of that. And you have to understand, it's very unlikely for Vanessa to be bluffing there because Faraz is all in. So she can't be trying to bluff Faraz off his hand. This is supposed to be a value play by Vanessa. So when Joe Tia now comes over the top of that, it really feels like it's supposed to be value from him. And queens is not an automatic call there. So I think that, you know, in that situation, you just have to sort of take comfort in the fact that you made a really good call. And obviously, it didn't work out, but I don't know what else you can do to not, I mean, because otherwise you're just going to think about that hand for the rest of your life, you know? I mean, that's the advice that I give everybody. Sort of focus on the things you have control over. Try to discard the things you don't. And in that particular case, she had control over making a fantastic call, which she did with the two queens. She was completely right to make the call, and unfortunately, she didn't get rewarded for it. And I think you got to try to take comfort in that. That being said, I've had some hands like that happen, and trust me, I think I still have bad dreams about them, so I don't know that I take my own advice there.
But there's probably, this is going to probably be one of the epic classic TV moments of when he flips over the 2-4 all-in move and takes them both out on the bubble. This is incredible. So tomorrow they're down to 12 players. They go down to foreplay tomorrow. What do you think about the foreplay? Do you think it's going to be like totally aggressive and super aggressive tomorrow in the play?
So let me just say that first of all, I would suggest that you say four max instead of foreplay.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay, I got it. I got it.
You got it finally. Okay,
we're women, though. You know how our thoughts are sometimes. We're women talking to women, so.
So yeah, no, I think that, you know, just as anything, when you remove players from the table, it's gonna cause the play to be a little bit faster. People are gonna be more likely to be playing more hands. They're gonna be more likely to be willing to play a little bit weaker. You know, the thing that I really like about the really shorthanded play, particularly with this group of players, is that it just really demands a lot of creativity, and it really challenges the player's poker skills because, you know, when you're at a nine-handed table, you just have a lot more time to wait for the best hand and to make sure you have the best hand and just be trying to get value out of the best hand. When you're at a short-handed table, you just got to be creative and try to, you know, pick up pots that don't belong to you, because if you sit there and you just wait for the best hand, you're just going to go broke doing that. So I think that it really showcases in a way that nine-handed play doesn't, you know, what these really amazing players, you know, the best players in the world are capable of.
Well, it's definitely been an incredible playing field out there in Vegas. We were just so excited. We wanted to come out there and join, but with the holidays and everything, we're just so busy here, we just could not make it, but we're definitely going to be out there for the next one. What are the epic plans for 2012?
Well, you know, we're obviously going to be doing our final event in our championship, and then we're just involved right now in planning for season 2. I mean, we really like what we've built here. The players seem to be really enjoying it. They like playing at our events, and, you know, just expect us to be trying to bring more of that to everybody and keep building on what we've created in 2011.
So with these final 12 players, do you have a selection of who you think might take it? And have you got...
Oh, you know, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, they're all so amazing, and it really just kind of depends on how the hands go. I mean, obviously, you always, you know, mathematically, you would take the person with the most chips, which is obviously Joe Tihan. But I mean, they're all so good. It's like, you take someone like Jason Mercier, he was very much down to the felt yesterday, you know, and now obviously he's above par. So anything can happen. If you get a double up into the hands of the right player, things can shift very, very quickly. And one of the things that's really cool about forehand to play in particular is that's where you can get things shifting really fast. So I wouldn't want to go in there and, you know, and predict anything, because they're all amazing players. They're all capable of winning. And, you know, if you get the chips in the right hand with some run good, along with it, any one of these players could take it down.
Well, what are your thoughts on, like, day one, more than half of the field survived? I mean, that's in a $20,000 buy-in, half the field was eliminated. That's kind of crazy.
Well, it actually wasn't half the field. It was closer to a third of the field, which is exactly what we designed the events for. So we started with 100 players. We came back with, I think it was about 69, 68. And so that's exactly what we would expect. On day two, you know, then we lost over half the field, and we actually expect that as the blinds start to, you know, start to climb on day two, you're going to see that happen. We came back with 25 today. You know, obviously didn't expect to get down to 12 so quickly, but obviously with a few double knockouts, you know, that's just going to speed things up. Tomorrow's probably going to be a pretty long day, though.
Are the players liking this mixed match main event?
You know, I think that it's like anything. I mean, I think there's players that love it. You know, and there's players that might prefer to play like a straight-up nine-handed event. You know, there's players who want to play heads-up. There's players who love the six-max. There's players who love the nine-max. And one of the things that we're doing in Epic is really trying to offer a variety of formats so that everybody gets something that they like. I've heard great comments about this from these players. I think the pros in particular like the mix-up of the number of players at the table. I think it challenges, you know, sort of their whole set of skills. And you know, the best players definitely rise to that challenge, and we've got the best players in the league. So
tomorrow when they start, they will start with the four-handed, not foreplay, but they'll start with the four-handed. Yeah. Will they play down to the final table, TV table?
Yeah, they're going to play down to five, because the final table combines at five. So they're going to play down to five players, and then Sunday they're going to play down to two, and then play best of three heads up.
Hey, Annie, this is SC again. How have the wild card entries, those nine folks who won their way into the main event through the Pro-Am, how have they been doing?
In this particular one, they didn't fare so well. So definitely none of them cashed. All 12 players that are now in the tournament are league card holders. But in the first two events, they actually fared really well. In the first event, we had Dan Fleischman and Brandon Myers both cash. And then in the second event, we not only had two of the Pro-Am players cash, but we had one of them make the final table in Sean Getzweiler. So when he made the final table, he actually picked up provisional eligibility and was able to enter this event in December. So I would say that they've done very well overall. In this particular event, they happened to get the goose egg.
And there's actually another event in January where they can qualify again in a Pro-Am and get one of those nine seats in as well. It's really kind of cool.
Correct. And,
that,
yep.
The end of January at the Palms.
Right. So that's going to be, people can look at the website for the dates, but that is January 27th and 28th are the two start dates for the Pro-Am. It's a $1,500 event. We always run an ample satellite schedule beforehand, and you can get all that information off of epicpoker.com.
So what type of charity events do you have coming up?
Me personally?
Yeah. Are you going to be playing in any?
Yeah, I'm doing something for the San Diego Humane Society in January. I've got an event for cystic fibrosis scheduled that will be in Chicago in the spring. People should check my Twitter to follow that. I'm doing an event with NASCAR, actually, in conjunction with the Daytona 500 in February. That's a charity event, so that's going to be pretty fun. I think I've never been to a NASCAR race, so I think it's going to be really fun to go check out the Daytona 500. And then in the later spring, I always do something with Children's Hospital Boston, and then I pick up things here and there. We're going to be doing an Anti-F for Africa event in conjunction with Epic's next event as well, so people can always be checking my Twitter, at Annie Duke, find out whatever I'm doing with charity, and hopefully come out and support it.
Sweet.
And the Epic charity event in conjunction with the January tournament at the Palms, too.
Right. That's going to be the Anti-F for Africa event. So people will be able to get that information about that off the website. so far at the poker in the first three events has raised over $125,000 for charity. So we're pretty proud of that, and we're hoping to add to that number significantly at the next event.
That's fantastic. I have been informed by the home office of OTR that whatever Epic Live team member picked, all she wants to do is dance for their fave 80s tune as the winner.
Okay.
We've been running an 80s night here all night, at actually all weekend here at On Tilt Radio.
Right.
Well, I know you're real busy, Annie, and I want to thank you for taking your time out and joining us tonight.
Well, thank you.
If you see Michael Craig tomorrow by chance, tell him I'm sorry I didn't make it out there to Satellite Inn because I had a challenge with him that I was going to meet him at the final table and play heads up with him. But the next Epic event, I'm going to try my best to Satellite Inn and be out there and play with him. So tell him I said hi, and I will try
I will.
To be out there. And you have a beautiful, wonderful, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and wonderful New Year. And
you too.
I was just so rooting for Vanessa to take it. She was the only poker chick left.
I know. It's just so heartbreaking.
I know. I'm just still kind of devastated. I don't know how she's handling it, but tell her that On Tilt Radio says hi. And man, I was rooting for her. God.
Okay, I'll tell her that.
Okay.
Right, well, thanks a lot for your time, you guys. I love coming on the show, and I'm sure. Hopefully, you'll have me back in the future.
Oh, definitely. You're welcome. Anytime you want, just let us know, and hopefully, we'll see you in January.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Ooh, Robin wins best line of the night. Well done, Bickersons, and their Friday helper, SC Big. Big thanks, of course, to Annie. Always a pleasure to have her stop by the studios. Keep pace with all the Epic Poker League action by visiting epicpoker.com, and you can stay tuned to ontiltradio.com, as always, for more chats with the Epic crew, plus all our great live and original programming. We'll see y'all again soon. Thank you for downloading an On Tilt Radio podcast.